Today is what? Thursday.
I can try to get it for you tomorrow, if not Monday. Like that, tomorrow. So today I'll just read and then... Okay, so this is the Nyayasar, the essence of logic. Following is the explanation of the time-honored Vedic practice used for the development of teaching instruction. Okay. According to which any book should begin with an appropriate Mangalacharan. Can you all hear? Can you hear? Yeah? Okay. The Mangalacharan, consisting of one or more verses, is of three varieties or any combination. Namaskrityatmaka, paying obeisances to one's teacher, worshipable deity, or both. Two, Ashirvadatmika, praying to the Lord for his blessings, bestowing blessings upon the readers, or exclaiming all glories to the Lord. And three, Vastu, Nirdeshatmaka, summarizing the subject matter of the book. Right, so the Mangalacharan, this is the form it will take, like that. Then, in that, then we have another aspect, which is called the Anubandha Chatushtaya, which is four aspects that it will explain. In other words, it will take the form of these. It will glorify the teacher, the deity. It will ask for blessings, or it will summarize the subject matter, or it may do just one of those, it may do two, it may do all three. How they'll do it is up to the, you know, literary expertise or desire of the writer. Does that make sense? So sometimes you see very simple Mangalacharans, sometimes like Chaitanya Charitamrita, very elaborate Mangalacharans, like that. So in any case, that would be the form. Then this Anubandha Chatushtaya. So this is described by this Kumari Labhata. He is the main commentator on the Karma Mimamsa, Jaimini Sutras, like that. So he's a very well-accepted authority. So then the introduction must include these four aspects. Qualifications of the person who may study the book, right? Because you have to know who the book is for. The connection between the book and its subject, Sambandha. The subject itself, Vishaya, and what the reader will gain by reading the book and following the path it prescribes, Prayojana. Oh no, this is the adjusted copy, so I can get you this tomorrow. See, is that because a work will be for a particular audience, just like you see is like Nectar of Devotion, or in the Ananda Vrindavan Champu. Then in the beginning, in the Mangalacharan, then we see the Acharyas, Rupa Goswami or Kavi Karnapur, they immediately say this is for devotees only. If you're a religionist, if you're a moralist, if you're a smarta, you know, if you're an impersonalist, then put the book down and walk away. Like that, because this book is not for you. Right? So we see that this will always be done, is that the, yeah. Then, or in the, and then it will explain what the book does, why, how this book is getting that objective, and what the subject, okay. So then we see, like in Bhagavatam, that it describes the Supreme Lord, it glorifies the Supreme Lord. Then it asks for his blessings, it's a meditation upon the Lord, so it's using that form. Then in the second verse, it uses three verses for its Mangalacharan. So then in the second verse, then it mentions that we're kicking out, you know, all cheating religion. So this is only devotion. It's only for devotees. Right? And it's establishing that it is pure unalloyed devotion. It's about the Supreme Lord. In about the Supreme Lord is about pure unalloyed devotion. Because it could be about the Supreme Lord and be about anything else. You know, so many varieties of topics. So then it's specifically in that line. Then in the third verse, then it talks about rasa, right? So this is then what is going to be specifically brought out. So one will be able to taste that rasa relationship with the Supreme Lord. Does that make sense? So the elements of Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana are established in the Mangalacharan. Right? It means you have the qualification of the person and the connection between the book and its subject. So that's Sambandha. You have the subject itself, the Vishaya, it's the active principle that's going on. And what the reader will gain by it. Right? In Manu, then it mentions that they're approaching Lord Brahma, the sages are there, and they're saying, you please describe to us about Varnashram. Why we've approached you for Varnashram is because you can tell how Varnashram works in relationship to the Supreme Lord. Right? Others explain Varnashram, but without connection to the Lord. But Brahma can explain it in relationship to the Lord. These are great sages. They already know about Varnashram. But they want to know Varnashram in connection with Vishnu. Right? So the Daiva Varnashram. Right? So then Brahma says, okay, so now, you know, you high-minded sages, now you listen. I will explain this all to you. Right? So now you know. Manusamhita is for high-minded persons. Right, its purpose is understanding Varnashram for developing love for Krishna. Right, does that make sense? So it all these things become explained very nicely. Right, does that make sense? So we see that. Or Chanakya, when he's explaining his the Arthashastra. Then he gives a complete summary of all the subject matter that's in the work, right in the beginning. So then that's also part of this Mangalacharan, even though it doesn't seem like it, but it is. Or we see that like Krishna Das Kaviraj, he writes all the different subject matter he's going to write about. One, he gives glorification of the Lord, but he also tells what subject matter. And then he spends the next, I think, 4 or 5 chapters explaining the Mangalacharan, like that. So in that way, the whole thing actually becomes an extension of it, just like in Mana, the whole first chapter is an extension of that, because since it's in relation to the Lord, you have to know who the Lord is and how that connection comes, like that. So, or there's one more example I was going to show. Oh well. But yes.
Bhagavad Gita doesn't have one because it's part of the Mahabharata.
That was the other one, Mahabharata. Mahabharata, then we see is that he comes in and says that, okay, now I will speak this for you because you are sages. Right? In other words, you must speak according to the audience. You're speaking to sages, you speak one way. You know, you're speaking to kids, you speak another way. Depending on who your audience is. So he's defined his audience, right? In other words, religious-minded persons who are seekers of the absolute truth. Then he goes on and he explains it, and he gives a full deliberation of what is in the Mahabharata, complete. He does it through two clever things. One is explaining what every section is, how many chapters, how many verses, everything. How it was written, everything like that. Another way is he has Dhritarashtra give an explanation. That when Vidura comes and, you know, afterwards that he's lost everything and he's got nothing now. Remember, Vidura goes and visits him after coming back. So at that time, then you get a preview of that pastime where Dhritarashtra tells Vidura that I knew all these things beforehand. When I saw this, I knew we were finished. When I saw that, and he mentions every pastime there is in the whole Mahabharata. Like that, you know. So, in other words, you have the literary, freedom, right? The author to be able to make some adjustments and other things like that, and how he wants to make this presentation, right? The formula is there, but how it will be presented is varied. As we can see, is that every book has one, right? It means you could say that it's there in the Bhagavad Gita because it's Dharmakshetra, Kurukshetra. You know who it is, what's going on, it's a battle and all that. But Dharmakshetra means it's the place of Dharma. So therefore, Dharma is going to be established here. What's the actual Dharma? Is Sanatan Dharma, right? Because then we're starting off Arjuna with regular Dharma, like that, where he's Sakam. But then we see that Krishna says he's a fool and he explains the spiritual. So then he thinks, okay, great, I'm going to go to the forest. But then he explains, no, you're going to fight. Right? So that means it's performance of duty as nishkam. Right? That's the proper platform. And this nishkarmya will liberate you from the material world. Can you hear? Okay. Will liberate you from the material world. But and at the same time, as if it's done in connection with Krishna, you'll get devotion. Does that make sense? So these things will come out. So you also have your preliminary, because you have your Mangalacharna, which will give you in a nutshell what's there. But then at the same time, as you always have your introductory chapter or chapters, depending upon the author and how much needs to be explained. So we see in the Bhagavatam, then your first canto is an introduction. Because the discussion between Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Pariksit starts in the second canto. But the sages ask, how did this book come up? Therefore, then there's all these discussions for one canto. Right? Then in Krishna and Arjuna, the actual subject matter starts in the second chapter. So he's already given the whole first chapter and part the beginning of the second chapter. Because it's the same material, but it's slightly different. Therefore, it's in another chapter. Manu does the same. The whole first chapter is just establishing the supremacy of the Lord and how he does the primary creation. And part, the beginning of the second chapter, to establish the authority of the Veda. Then after that, he actually starts on describing the samskaras and the varnashram system. Right? Does that make sense? You know, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami spends much of the Adi Lila up to the pastimes. In other words, when he starts the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, then you can say that is the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Before that, those are all introductory chapters. Right? So the Mangalacharan gives the essence of that. The introduction will expand that to the point where now you have the qualifications to study the work. Right? Academics, since they don't work on qualifications, not at least in this way. They have their own academic method. They always consider that these introductory chapters are interpolations. Someone else has put them in because in their mind they can't see the connection between that and the work. It's strange, but it's true, right? What's it? Fact is stranger than fiction.
Yes.
So they're a very strange bunch. Like that. They pat each other on the back. They're very happy with themselves, but they're a strange bunch, So they should stick to their own books. They got books written by Westerners. Stick to those. The Vedic ones, they should stay away from. If they're really honest academics, they stay away. Because otherwise, since they don't understand them, they have to make all kinds of stupid comments. Okay. So is this basically clear? Because you'll get one of these to be able to read and all that. So is this, any questions on this concept? Okay. The purpose of delineating these four items is to create an interest in the mind of the reader or student, as Sri Kumarila Bhatia states in his Shloka Vartika. Only after knowing the relation of the book with the subject matter, sambandha, and the purpose to be achieved, prayojana, is one inspired to study a book. Therefore, sambandha and prayojana must be stated at the opening. Right? And we'll also see is that the book will open and it will close with something that is common. Right? That'll be discussed in the next lesson. Like that. It means a lesson doesn't mean one class, a lesson means a subject matter. So this is one lesson. Right? A lesson may also be half a page. Does that make sense? Like that. So then, yeah. So here is that if the prayojana is not there, no one wants to study. Right? So by the discussions we were having this morning, what method is that? Vikash? No. Means we are saying thinking, feeling, and willing. It's using the method of the mind, because you have to track the mind. The intelligence can analyze it, but why would you analyze it unless the mind wants you to? Right? So in other words, you have to show the goal, then only Abhideya will happen. So in this case, the Abhideya will be the study of the book. Like that. Somebody get out of the cage or something. is that clear? So that's why the Mangalacharan, one, it states so that you know. So if you come across a work you've never seen before, then, by reading the Mangalacharan, you can understand what is the general context of the book. Right? So that's there. It's just like a table of contents. If you read it, supposedly you can kind of get an idea what the book's about. Like that. But this is more clearly stated. Like that. As there are ultimate and intermediate goals, different qualifications are needed to achieve those goals. We must first establish the qualifications needed to study, adhikari, and the means of evaluation. By making clear the relationship, sambandha, between the book, the subject matter, the qualified student, and the goal, continuity and sequence is provided for the student to integrate what might otherwise appear as isolated learning experiences, right? Because generally we think, oh, we have this, we have this, we have this. But you have to be able to see it as one thing. Then you can use it. Then it means, one, you can think like that, but then that means you can apply it. Right? The difficulty is when we study knowledge and all these like compartmentalized, we never can apply it. That's the difficulty with the modern academy, is because of this compartmentalization, if you're not learning a practical science like medicine or law, where you actually have to practice it, then there's nothing. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to practically apply it. So the knowledge you have and the application could be two different things. Right? Like you can do an academic course on music, and you learn so much on music, but at the end of the day, you can't play any music. Sometimes people who are interested in music take those courses. Does that make sense? But someone who really wants to learn music goes to a music school, because they're going to teach you how to play music. The theory will also be learned. Does that make sense? So then he's saying is that when you see all of this, then you can understand how it all connects together, how you can apply it in your life. This is what makes the Vedic Academy special, is because it works. It's applied. It's applied science. Right? It means they always get into this applied science. Quantum physics was the applied science, right? Like that. Supposedly. But whatever. Okay. We must see that the learning experiences of the subject proper bring about the attainment of the purpose, prayojana, the student seeks to obtain. Means by studying it, what you're gaining from the study should get you the goal. Right? You have something you want to do with it. Right? Therefore, it should get you that. Right? So we're pointing out here is that therefore this philosophy course is for the purpose that you'll understand the technicalities of philosophy, how it works. You'll be able to apply that in your own observation of, you know, the Shastra and whatever is observable. In other words, in Pratyaksha, Anuman, and Shabda. And be able to apply it. In other words, if you know this, you'll be able to take Shabda and bring it down to Pratyaksha. Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions, if you can take the Shabda and see it directly in front of you, then you know what subject matter. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, if you know the theory but can't see it in the world around you, it means you haven't fully understood it. You understand, but you haven't fully, because you should be able to apply it. Right? So this course is to give you that kind of understanding. Right? How to bring what is being talked about into your life. That means you see that way and you practice that way. Right? So you would see that way, that means you would want to see that way, you would want to practice it that way. That's your goal. So by studying these methods, then you'll be able to do that. Does that make sense? Right? So that student who wants to understand, you know, technically how the Guru Sadhana and Shastra works, they want to be able to back up their devotional sentiment with philosophy, so that they can keep themselves, make sure they're on track, that they don't get distracted. Because if you're dealing in emotion, sometimes one can be bewildered by material emotion, because they look similar, right? It means one of the points in the other is rasa. Rasa is the same. It's just what it's applied on, but the principle of rasa is the same, whether it's spiritual, emotional, or sensual. So one has to be able to distinguish. Attachment is the same, but whether it's spiritual or material. So it's the philosophy that lets you see the difference. Otherwise, if you just depend upon the mind, you may make a mistake. That's why we have sahajiyas. Right? Sahajiyas are those who can't tell the difference between a spiritual emotion and a material one. Does that make sense? So that's why philosophy is important. They don't like philosophy. Right? And then your impersonalists are just into philosophy. They're not into emotion. because they take emotion as maya. They don't know about spiritual emotion. So Prabhupada says these are the two sides of what's on either side of the path, the razor-like path back to Godhead, the razor's edge path. Right? You stay on that path, it works perfectly. You go off, you have Sahaja on one side, you have the impersonalist on the other side. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. So now we go into this. Okay. Now here, I think now he's giving an introduction, so now he's going to give example here himself. So this is the Namaskritya, paying obeisances to one teacher's and worshipable deity or both. With folded hands, we offer respectful obeisances to the lotus feet of our worshipable spiritual masters, friends, and all well-wishers of the Bhaktivedanta Academy for performing this Jnana Yajna, or worship of the Lord by the means of the transcendental knowledge. Ashirvandatmika, praying to the Lord for his blessings, bestowing blessings upon the readers, or exclaiming all glories to the Lord. After decorating our bodies with the dust from their lotus feet, we desire to exclaim, all glories, all glories. All glories to beautiful Radha Madhava, who are the essence of all transcendental knowledge, sweetened with the nectar of their loving pastimes. They are the presiding deities of Sridham Mayapur, where the waxing moon of the chanting of the holy names of Krishna has ascended to spread its cooling rays of good fortune for all living entities. This moon is the life and soul of all education. May we always remain in its soothing light. Vastu Nirdeshatmaka, summarizing the subject matter of the book, establishing the necessity of philosophy. Like all other living entities, man struggles for existence. But while the lower beings struggle more or less blindly without any conscious plan or purpose, and work by instinct, man uses the superior gift of his intelligence to understand the conditions and meanings of his struggle for existence. He wishes to lead his life in the light of the knowledge of himself and the world, taking into consideration not merely the immediate results of his actions, but even their far-reaching consequences. Desire for knowledge springs, therefore, from the rational nature of man. Philosophy satisfies this desire and is therefore not a mere luxury, but a necessity. Right, so he's making the point is that philosophy is not, it's not just something unnecessary. It's important because it actually gives the guidance, it gives the vision through which we progress. It means we're going to perform an activity that's going to give us an experience. So the devotional experience will come, but unless we know the philosophy, we're not actually sure if we're applying it properly in a devotional experience. Does that make sense? So the philosophy is necessary. That's what makes a human being. Otherwise, experience is being gained by the animals. But what distinguishes between the human experience and the animal is that of the knowledge. Right? So he's pointing out, therefore, this philosophy is essential. That's what makes the difference. Prabhupada will bring this out later in this work. According to Arthashastra, with the help of philosophy, we are investigating by means of reasoning what is spiritual good and evil in the Vedic lore, material gain and loss in economics, good policy and bad policy in the science of politics, as well as the relative strength and weakness of these three sciences. Philosophy confers benefit on the people, keeps the mind steady in adversity and in prosperity, and brings about proficiency in thought, speech, and action. Philosophy is ever thought of as the lamp of all sciences, and the means of all actions, and as the support of all laws and duties. Of the 14 books of Vedic knowledge, the philosophy is considered... Is this fan too much? Is it cold? The philosophy is considered the transcendental knowledge. All the other 13 books are considered material knowledge. Right? That's the Vedic understanding. So in other words, all the material knowledge is kept on the path, progressive path back to Godhead by the philosophy. Right? So the philosophy is very, very essential. By volume, it's the minimal, right? Because it's one out of 14 books, right? Philosophy? Yeah. Philosophy is what in the Vedas they'll call Mimamsa. Like that. Or we'll call it Vedanta. Because of Mimamsa, we follow Vedanta. So for us, it'll be Vedanta for the Jaimini, they'll call it Mimamsa because they're Purva Mimamsa. Others, they'll call it yoga or nyaya or different things like that, whatever's their understanding. In other words, philosophy is what gives the interpretation how you're going to view something, right? Because you could view it from any angle, so the philosophical is the first most important. Then from there, then depending upon your particular, you know, application, then you'll apply the various other sciences on it. Does that make sense? Yeah?
Yes.
Still makes sense. Yeah? Okay, so then that means everything will work. So in economics, in sense gratification, in politics, all of that must be guided by philosophy. This is Chanakya, right? And he is a materialist. And he accepts that without the philosophy, even materially, you're not going to be successful, right? So he's an authority in this. We accept him. He is a true Brahmin. So what he says is correct. He just doesn't emphasize very much on the devotional side. He's just more interested in the, you know, in the artha, dharma, artha, and kama. That's his main field. But it's not that he doesn't mention higher than that, worship of Vishnu and this and that. He says, no, don't live in a place where there aren't saintly persons, where there's no river, I think, and where the black buck doesn't roam, like that. So he says, he means other than that, don't bother. Why? Because black bucks, then the skins of those are worn by Brahmins, like that. So how the black buck roams could either mean where there are Brahmins, but you've already mentioned saintly persons, so it could be just a black buck, or it could mean you have the saintly persons and then you have your general Brahmins, because they wear the black buck skin and they're roaming about in your city or in your locale. Does that make sense? You know, so like that. So in other words, it illuminates everything. Without it, it's there's no meaning. That's why you see, as we can describe even the social interactions, you can go back and forth between the philosophy and the social interaction. And because of this philosophy as a method of seeing, you can go between the transcendental rasa and material rasa. And see that the formulas are the same. But without the philosophy, you won't know which is which. So you won't know how to become transcendental. Right? If you want to deal with the material world, you have to deal with God's laws. But without the philosophy, you'll just deal with God's laws and be stuck in the material world. So you have to be able to deal with God's laws in such a way you get yourself out. So that means both are there. It has to be, you have to know the science, you have to know the application. Without this, and you have to know the philosophy. If you don't know the philosophy, you won't know how the science and its application is either going to give you spiritual and material results. Right? So those that say that the Vedas or the Vedic literature is not practical means that they're not very educated in this area. They may be well educated in other areas, but this area, they don't really know so much. Otherwise, we can see is that if it's not practical, it's not being used. Right? And without philosophy, the practical doesn't work. Right? So you have to have the philosophy, you have to have the science, you have to have its application. You have all these three, that's the Vedic understanding. You don't have these three, that's something else. Right? The modern doesn't deal with philosophy, very rare even deals with the science. If it does deal with the science, there's no application. If they deal with application, there's no science. Right? They'll just touch on it. The orientation course presents how Vedic philosophy illuminates the entire body of Vedic knowledge. The broad body of Vedic knowledge is presented in a summary form, therefore the term bindu is used. Upon seeing the range of material being covered in the course, one may get easily overwhelmed, but that is not what we worry about. There are many examples of a devotee being overwhelmed seeing the beauty, sweetness, and opulence of the Absolute Truth. Right? So, one who's written the material for this, he's saying that there's so much material, so if you're overwhelmed by it, don't worry. Devotees have been known to be overwhelmed by Krishna in so many ways, so this is just another knowledge form of Krishna, so that's not a problem. So he very, very sweetly resolves that anxiety. Indeed, the orientation course is full of philosophical siddhanta, siddhanta manis, or jewels of spiritual truths, which shine with the light of sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana, which is the vastutrayi, or the substance of Vedic knowledge. Vastutrayi is sambandha, abhideya, prayojana. Vastu means substance, and trayi means three. So the three vastus, the three substances, are sambandha, abhideya, prayojana. Does that make sense? So, and the essence of that is Krishna. Krishna is the vastava vastu. He is the vastu of vastu. Right? Just like in the material sphere, vastu, he gets his potency from Krishna. Right? So the potency of vastu comes from the Lord. So in here. So even when we're dealing with the essential truths, the essence of the essential truth is still Krishna. Is Krishna. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's known as vastutrayi. There are 108 such jewels. They are 108 lessons. They are very skillfully stringed together using colorful threads of Anubandha Chatushtaya, the fourfold method of presentation, Panch Anga Nyaya, or the five techniques of logic, and Tat Paryalingas, six ways to determine the meanings of the Veda Vakya, or Vedic pronouncements. Right? So you have the four aspects of the Anubandha Chatushtaya, means what is the subject matter, who's qualified, what you'll get from it, and what is your goal, right? Then you have the Panchanga Nyaya, that's the presentation. As we've discussed before, we'll get into detail of you have your thesis, then your expansion of that, your examples, then your, bringing all things together, and then the conclusion, like that. And then you have the Tat Paryalingas, which are the six ways to determine the meaning of the what is being taught. If you have a new book, you want to know what it means, there's the Tat Paryalingas, are the method by which you can understand what is important. Right? Otherwise it's said, what is important in Gita? The Tat Paryalingas give you a way to understand that. Like that. That's the second lesson. The second lesson will be Tat Paryalingas. This lesson is Anubandha Chatushtaya and the Panchanga Nyaya. Okay? So these are the first two lessons of okay. Using those colorful threads and jewels for four astonishing ornaments are made. These are the four modules of the orientation course and are used to decorate the body of Veda Purusha, the Vedic knowledge personified. The first model fully establishes the Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta and methods of analysis and interpretation of scripture. This gives the perspective from which the student will view all the scriptures and all angles by which the scriptures are interpreted. Means how you see the scriptures and how many ways the scriptures can be viewed. Right? This is called vichar. Very important. Be able to see from different angles. Because by seeing from different angles, then you have a very clear picture. But if you look at something that's 3D from one side only, you may not get a really full picture. If you look at it from all angles, then you get a complete picture of it. The second module shows the various Vedic schools of interpretation of the Vedic literatures, according to their particular perceived goals and various methods to obtain those goals. Right? In other words, this Vedic knowledge is there, means there's our way we're going to look at it, but others look at it in various ways. Right? The four sampradayas, they look at it in other ways. And so therefore, then that will be there, your six systems of philosophy. They're taking the same Veda, but seeing it from different points of view. The same verse, you get six philosophies out of it. So that's Mimamsa. How do you interpret this? It's also known, I think, what is it? Hermeneutics.
That's how you say it.
The hermeneutics. Is that how you
what if that has anything to do with Herman? Herman's always a mirror, right?
So how you perceive these things. How you define it like that. So that is what will be learned in our Siddhanta. Then we start to see how the other Vaishnava Sampradayas and Vedic lines see it, like that. Then Module 3 shows how with time these schools have become simplified and mixed to create past and present world religions and philosophies, right? Bhaktivinoda Thakura then expands how all this has come out to be kind of like, the variety that we see around us. In the fourth module, students study the essence of each branch of the 14 books of Vedic knowledge. The module concludes by demonstrating that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence of all Vedic literatures, propounding the highest truth. Right? So then from that, then one's ready to study Bhagavatam. Right? In other words, you've gone through what is philosophy, what are all the different branches of Vedic knowledge, because you have to be able to see that Vedic knowledge through the philosophy. That means then you'll know all the, in essence, all the Vedic knowledge. Then seeing that the Bhagavatam is the essence of that. Right? So then we're very happy to study Bhagavatam and not be worried about other literatures for finding the absolute truth. We can study other things for various knowledge, but we wouldn't take that as more important. Does that make sense? So in other words, this course basically is to establish that Srimad Bhagavatam is our book. Right? If you talk to other sampradayas, other groups, then if they really want to know about you, your philosophy, one of the first questions they'll ask you is, what is your book? You know, because you have a book that you're going to, everything's going to be based off of. So our book is Bhagavatam. Right? So Gita is the preliminary to that. Chaitanya Charitamrita is a finer, you know, viewpoints of it, finer discussions of it. But the book is Bhagavatam. Lord Chaitanya is known as the preacher of Bhagavatam. Right? Does that make sense? The essence of this course is to be found in Module 1 and the second part of Module 4, Analyzation of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta and Presentation of the Super Excellent Position of Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? In other words, the Vaishnava Siddhanta and Bhagavatam is the conclusion. Everything else in between is the various ways of manifestation of this. Right? So that you have a broad range and so that one is not bewildered. One can study. Narad Muni, one of his qualities when it's describing what he knows is that he can discuss any subject matter. He's not disturbed by any subject matter. There's nothing that he wouldn't be willing to discuss because he sees all subject matter in relationship to Krishna. Right? So that is called Anuchana. Right? Someone who sees all the Vedic literatures in connection with Krishna and can see the connection between all Vedic literatures with one another, you know, based on Krishna. That's Anuchana. So, therefore, there's nothing that he doesn't want to discuss, because sometimes, you know, you want to discuss Grihastha life, Brahmacharis don't want to hear about it. Right? But Narad Muni can discuss anything. Right? When he's discussing in the Bhagavatam, most of the time, he's discussing about Grihastha life or the performance of duties. Some of the time he's just discussing straight brahmacharya, you know, like he did with Daksha's sons, you know, turned them all into sannyasis, right? So, you know, so that's his point. He can do that. He can do any of that. He can give a class to brahmacharyas, he can give a class to grihasthas, he can do anything for anybody. Because he sees everything in relationship to Krishna. So that's the idea of this course, is you'll be able to see like that. Does that make any sense? So that's why we won't be doing this in 3 months. If you wanted to know. But their course is 3 months. Yes, yeah, so that's slightly different. That is where the beating heart of the Veda Purusha is found, and that is where Srimad Bhagavatam is placed. And from there it gives life and meaning to all remaining parts of the body. The Vedangas and Upangas also taught in this course. Right? Meaning, in other words, all the Vedic literatures. After seeing this beautiful form, the student is at once overwhelmed with transcendental bliss and elevated to the first stage of learning explained in the Upanishads, Shravana, or hearing. The student learns where all the jewels are placed and how Veda Purusha uses his various limbs. And our qualification of the person who may study this book. Right? This is still all the Mangalacharya. In other words, the person who's putting together this study on how a Mangalacharan works is taking full liberties on, literary expression to do all these things. The orientation course is meant for those students who, accepting the authority and relevance of the Vedic teachings, are interested in understanding the essence of the Vedic body of knowledge for the purpose of self-application and preaching. Connection between the book and its subject, Sambandha. The orientation course introduces the student to the essential concepts of Vedic knowledge by studying them in a concise form so one learns fundamental Vedic principles from a theistic angle of view as presented in Srimad Bhagavatam. In other words, you were studying all these different things, but the view is theistic. Because it could be atheistic. Right? It could be done otherwise, but then that's a problem. It's also interesting to note that it was in this one, it came up on this, just an explanation of theistic and atheistic. Is that if it's theistic, means that there's the Lord and the living entity, right? In other words, there's the Purusha and the Prakriti aspect. The difficulty the living entity has much of the time in relationships is it's actually an atheistic method of dealing, because one is only applying it to oneself. One's not applying it to others. So you're not counting two persons. You're only counting one, oneself. So therefore, you say it's impersonal, because it's atheistic. There's only one. There's not two. Make sense? It's interesting perspective. So that's an example of philosophy, you know, and then in the practical application of the culture. Okay, the subject itself, Vishaya. The subject matter of the course is history of philosophy and religion. The Vedic knowledge is complete, incorporating both transcendental para and secular apara disciplines, with the intention of assisting the individual in achieving the essential objective of self-realization. Right? So the course means it's the history of philosophy and religion, means where did all these come from? Right? Means how do you get the modern philosophies and religions? How is the Vedic there? Where did it come from? So then this is a logical step-by-step expansion of that. Right? Does that make sense? What the reader will gain by reading the book and following the path it prescribes, Prayojana. The reader who studies the course and follows the path it prescribes will certainly develop the ability to view the Shastra from the angle of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, and to apply this vision in all aspects of life. Thus he will become Shastra Chakshus, or one who views everything through the eyes of Shastra. In the process of becoming Shastra Chakshus, the student will be introduced to and familiarized with all the branches of Gaudiya and Vedic knowledge studied in the Bhaktivedanta Academy. At the end, he will be equipped with enough knowledge to establish the supremely sublime position of Lord Chaitanya's philosophy and the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam as the essence and the perfection of all knowledge. Okay. Yeah, it's also an idea is that whatever is studied in the academy will be in this course, so that if one wants to go deeper into any of these branches of knowledge, then there is a course that can be done to either Upadhyaya degrees or Acharya degrees that expand on these specific branches of knowledge. Otherwise, if it is our main line of philosophy, then that goes through the main course. You know, the Gita, Bhagavatam, and then the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Is that clear? So that way you have it touched on, because otherwise there may be an interest in so many things that by actually hearing whatever there is, then one knows whether one wants to go further or whether that much knowledge is, the essential points of knowledge are all one is, was wanting. So it also has that aspect. We are hoping that understanding and appreciating Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy and its place in the Vedic thought and culture will gift us with the fruit of philosophy which is explained by Srila Prabhupada. Quote, Asamoha, freedom from doubt and delusion, can be achieved when one is not hesitant and when he understands the transcendental philosophy. Slowly but surely he becomes free from bewilderment. Nothing should be accepted blindly. Everything should be accepted with care and caution. Bhagavad Gita 10, verses 4 and 5. Okay, is there any questions on this?
Who wrote the...
This? This is Subhekshana. Like that. He had done this many years ago, actually. Because we had started preparing this, I think back in... quite a few years ago. So he'll give me the outline of it. He's done some of the lessons. much of the lessons, but otherwise the outline is there, and we'll just go through as we go. But this is done. I'll get it to you for tomorrow.
You just have to say who's. Or I'll give you how many students.
So then, yeah. Because then tomorrow we'll start on the method of presentation, which is the Panchanga Nyaya. So that's now where it starts getting the technical. In other words, these things are technical, but once you get used to them, then they're quite straightforward. Because they are logical and they are practical. So it's not just this theory. So, and all of these things, we just keep using them and we'll get used to them as time goes. Like that. Because everything is actually done according to this method. Because Prabhupada mentions it, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur mentions it. They say if it's not done according to the Panchanga Nyaya, then we don't actually accept it. It's not logically presented. So we accept things that are presented according to this method. So it's not that, oh, well, this is just Vedic thing. No, this is what our acharyas present and use. That's what I'm saying is you've come across all these things, you're actually familiar with them, but you just don't know technically what they are, like that. So it's not that we're adding something new, it's making one aware of what actually is already there. Okay? Yeah? Yes?
Sometimes you hear the expression, it's too Vedic.
Yeah. It's too Vedic. Yes, but better two Vedic than one Vedic. Seeing that we're in the line of Madhvacharya, then it's two. Yes, we are two Vedic. And the one Vedic is for the Mayavadis. The Advaitavadis, yes. But generally, because the way we work, we're three Vedic. So we have Krishna, the internal potency, and the Jivas. So we'll end here for today. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
In here, it comes out tomorrow. It's very nice, this Anubandha Chatushtha. I mean, it's this Panchanga Nyaya. You can make it actually very clear on how. I mean, I came up with some history on how you can go through it and pull out whatever you need to pull out. Because it's already been delineated. I didn't really catch it by how pervasive the Panchanga Nyaya is. Because there's